Nearly all the best things that came to me in life have been unexpected, unplanned by me. Carl Sandburg.
Took a nap in the tent, and then I woke up and branches were just snapping like crazy all around my tent. And I woke up and I was looking right out through the mesh door, and maybe 4 or 5 feet away was this big old grizzly just staring at me. I was like, what the heck? This is crazy. And I sat up real fast and rubbing sleep out of my eyes, and I was on Thermarest. That's kind of noisy, and must have pissed it off because it like growled real low and just charged right at me. And it was pretty much on top of me, but I was able to rip open the flap of my tent. I unfortunately had to break my tent to get it open, and I was able to get my bear spray out. I sprayed it with the flap of the tent, caught the bear spray, whipped it around, and I sprayed myself full on in the face, dude. It was so gnarly.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the trail. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with that reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute, help us out, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. All right. With this week's episode, we have come to the epic conclusion of season 3 of the podcast. And to commemorate this tremendous occasion, we have a suitably epic guest this week. I would like to welcome back to the podcast, former guest, friend of the pod, and newly anointed Triple Crowner, Chris Carter. How's it going, Chris?
It's going really well, Doc. I appreciate you having me back on the podcast.
Okay. You are freshly off the trail. When did you finish?
I finished on the 17th, December 17th. So yeah, it's been just over a month now, I guess, since I've been back. Feels like yesterday. And I definitely have not processed it all yet.
Okay. Well, it's good that you're on the podcast tonight so that we can help you process that.
That's right. You're my therapist for the night. I hope you're all right with that.
That's great. I love asking therapist style questions because I'm never sure what the responses are going to be. It's very exciting.
That's right.
Okay. We are recording this in early February, although with this being the 50th episode, I think this is scheduled for a little bit to come out a little bit later this year. So this will be kind of like a time machine, if you will, back into into February. Okay. So I know your trail name, because you were on the podcast before with Bo and Ike, and we'll get to them in just a second. But I know your trail name from your earlier episode, but just for our folks who maybe didn't listen to that episode or who are meeting you for the first time, what is your trail name?
Yeah, so my trail name is Rad. And a lot of people didn't really understand it when I would say it. Like, is it right or red? Or no, it's like Shaka, throw it up, Rad. And partly because I say that a lot, but also because I have a butt tattoo that says Rad. One of those impromptu college decisions where you got a bunch of your friends that are like, let's freaking do it. And then you just do it. And then you're like, I don't know if I should have done that, but I did it. It's permanent. And while we were on the PCT, there's a section of trail that goes through a place called Deep Creek Hot Springs. And it's kind of like a nudist area. Everyone gets naked there. I was feeling a little uncomfortable and was not super psyched in getting naked, but I was kind of the only one that didn't. And so immediately there was a lot of peer pressure to join in the nudity. And everyone was saying, well, you know, he's just really scared that everyone's going to see his rad butt tattoo and make fun of him. So from then on, that's how I got named Rad. And it stuck. It's been my trail name for all three trails now. A lot of people ask if you get a new trail name for each trail. And, you know, everything in thru hiking, there's no such thing as a rule book. Make your own rules. But trail names are a very special part of thru hiking community and culture. And I think it's quite special to kind of have this like trail identity type of thing while you're out there that includes this like special name. It's got a fun backstory, but you know, I know a lot of people that change up their trail names for different trails and to each their own.
Now, I love that story because the way you just explained it, I envision myself at this location where everybody's getting naked, all the clothes are coming off, they're jumping in, and there's poor Chris, you know, he's not wanting to lose those shorts. Now, was it you or was it Ike or was it both of you that had those real short shorts? You guys swore by those.
It was both of them. Yep. Yeah, we were known by them, and that's been my signature ever since.
Okay, so I can picture Chris sitting there in his short shorts, and someone
basically
goes,
"Oh, naked already."
Yeah, practically. And someone says, "Oh, he just doesn't want to show off his rad butt tattoo," and so that really piques the curiosity and the interest of all the other hikers there, and thinking, "Oh, he's got a rad butt tattoo," and finally, you are pressured into losing the shorts, and you turn around and you show them a tattoo of the word rad. I can imagine they're thinking of something just epic on your cheeks and just can't wait to see it. And it's just a three-letter word, rad.
It's not even good, to be honest. We did it like this jank stick and poke, and the guy that did it lost his like nice needle. And so we had to like steal this big sewing needle from my roommate. It was just really bad. But the thing is, I actually never felt the temptation there. I stayed closed the entire time. There's actually only a handful of people in the world that have seen the rad butt tattoo. And so it's kind of a myth. Not everyone believes that it exists.
Now that story of actually getting the tattoo, that sounds like the start of some horror movie, right?
It was bad. It was deep in a dungeon of one of our dorm rooms. There was five of us. It was a whole ordeal for sure.
All right. Well, you've been on the podcast before, so you know about this segment towards the end of the episode called the Pro Tip Insight of the Week. That's where I will turn to you and ask you to share some trail wisdom with our listeners to keep them connected to the trail, but also to make their next outdoor experience even better. So don't be surprised when we get there. And I'm sure you have one in mind already. And we expect you to drop nuggets of trail wisdom throughout the episode.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Okay. Hey, I'm going to surprise you with something right here. Oh, sure. I did not tell you about this segment. We've also taken to doing a little impromptu current event segment in the podcast. And I, you know, the day of, I'll do a quick search of all my websites looking for some kind of interesting news related to hiking or through hiking or backpacking, anything like that. And I came across this gem today, and I want to hear your reaction about this.
Okay.
So this comes to us from KYW 1060 AM News Radio in Philadelphia.
Okay.
And I saw this headline just jumped out at me. It says that doctors can now prescribe park passes as treatment.
Interesting.
Have you heard of this?
I have never heard of that.
And so I have to credit this to our neighbors to the north, the Great White North. Doctors in Canada can now prescribe national park passes as treatment to patients. Mental health treatment.
Patients that with like depression, anxiety.
That's right.
How about, and that's in Canada though, not in the States?
Or? That's in Canada. It started in 2019. It's now available in four provinces in Canada, and they are aiming to spread it nationwide in Canada by the year's end. So I thought, you know, what a fantastic story, because we talk about all the time how people go into nature, people go on these long hikes, and they are transformed. And they are transformed for the better. They enter in one state of mind or one state of being, and they exit recharged and renewed, and just the transformative power of nature is phenomenal.
You know, it's a really interesting topic that I found myself thinking a lot more about on these previous two through hikes that I just did than I did on the PCT, was how through hiking in general changes your mindset of gratitude, your outlook on the world, and your mental health. You know, it's something that I talked with everyone that I came in contact with. And it's interesting because there is this notion of post-trail depression that a lot of through hikers talk about, which is you come off of the trail and your body is used to this incredible jolt of super great endorphins every single day for, in my case, 8.5 months of just constant cranking, and it's like you're on this runner's high. So just physiologically, it does wonders for you while you're on it. And then when you come off, I was doing a little bit of research on just what happens to your mind and body after something like that. And there's almost like this withdrawal period where your body has become addicted to this certain level of runner's high, we'll call it. And then you suddenly strip your body away from that. And that is a big contributor to the post-trail depression that a lot of people feel. But it's not only that, it's the way that social media and just through hiking in general has become a little more competitive almost. It's not become as much of a personal goal, a personal achievement. Now there's incentive for going out and getting the title of Triple Crown and hiking as fast as you can and setting FKTs. And there's this element that's hard to put your finger on of egotism in the through hiking community that became a lot more apparent to me on these trips. And so the root of what through hiking is was this back to nature movement, trying to bring people back into what gives us peace and joy and connection to nature. But a lot of it has turned into, unfortunately, a little bit of an ego fest. And it's cool hearing that people are recognizing the value of that, giving park passes, giving out. I think through hikers have a little bit to learn from that of kind of reframing our mind of why is it that we go out to do these things. It's not a competition with each other or with other people on social media, or how many trails can we tick off in a year and crank it out as fast as we can. Nothing wrong with that. But when that becomes the goal and the mindset and the aim, then I think that kind of convolutes the purpose of through hiking and getting out and experiencing these things in general, you know? And so in one sense, just having a small, maybe weekend interaction in a national park can almost benefit you just as much, if not more, than a through hike, because a through hike is a whole other level of different emotional and physical dynamics. And then now there's this kind of egotism and competition that's thrown in the mix. I'd love if you want to kind of flesh that out a little more further on in the pod, but it's something that I've been thinking a lot about and talking to some other kind of content creators in the through hiking community about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A lot to unpack right there. You just covered a lot of ground. first of all, I want to agree about, I want to echo your comments about depression, post-trail depression and the impact of nature on us and what happens to us when we leave. I've had a similar experience in that I've been a faithful runner for about 12 years now and just finished a marathon in San Diego back in October. And then in December, I suffered an IT band injury, high IT band injury. And I've been kind of not able to run for the last month and a half. And it is driving me crazy. You know, I can sense it in myself, just that, you know, not being able to do that. And it really affects my attitude and my, the way I feel. So, yes, that is a very real thing. The other thing is I really want to find a doctor in the US that will prescribe me a 6-month, long distance trail through hiking pass. And so, you know, if I can get that, I can present that to my work and say, look, it's prescribed by a doctor. I'm just going to do this, but, still it's just Canada at this point,
Well, you could do the Great Divide Trail up in Canada, pretend to be a Canadian, hit that.
Yeah. And you know, I was going to say that, you need to be able to prescribe national park passes in Canada, because if you've ever gone through the national park reservation system for the trail you just mentioned, I've talked to Bridget, who goes by Scrambles, and also Maddie St. Arnaud, both from the Great White North, and they both did, is it the Continental Divide Trail?
The Great Divide Trail.
Great Divide Trail. And they said, you know, our system is crazy. They said, is your system just as crazy? And I said, oh, our system's got to be crazier than your system. I've you know, just trying to get a permit for the John Muir Trail. Let me tell you how it goes. And they then proceeded to put me to shame in talking about what they had to do to book the Continental Divide Trail.
Yeah.
The Great Divide Trail.
It's super gnarly. Before I had planned to do the CDT-AT link up, I had tentatively planned on doing the CDT-GDT Great Divide Trail link up, because the southern terminus of the GDT is the northern terminus of the CDT. And it just makes sense to have this dope, like 4,000 or about 4,000 mile trail.
Right.
About Taxon 700 miles. But I started looking into the permit system and it was torture and torment, dude. It was brutal.
Yeah. Scramble said that she had 17 different computers up and running.
Oh.
And had, you know, four or five friends involved in assisting. And they had a couple of practice run throughs in the weeks leading up to what, how did she describe it? She described it as the great day of booking.
Oh my
God. The great day of booking was circled on her calendar. A couple of trial runs prior to that. And then 17 different devices involved in trying to get in line and book these different sections of the trail. Oh, just absolutely bonkers.
You got to be like sponsored by Apple to get these freaking like
passes. That's right.
That's insane, man. It was wild, just looking at it. I'd still love to do the GDT. COVID is what threw it off. Canada was closed for so long, and every single day I'd go on the immigration site and be like, come on, open up. And it was just getting too close to my start date. So that's actually one of the biggest reasons I kind of flipped it to then trying to knock out the AT.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned this, you know, people out there trying to set FKTs and really pounding the miles and really getting competitive with this. And my reaction to that is, if you're doing that out in nature, I mean, how is that different than the rat race that you're trying to escape in the city from your normal everyday life? You want to exist in the moment. That is the purpose. You want to be out there and enjoy what you're doing and enjoy what's around you. And if you are out there bound and determined every time to set a FKT or be involved in some competitive process, I think it takes away from that.
I totally agree. Obviously, I mean, I'm an ultra marathon runner myself. I love competing. I love going as fast as I can. And I see obviously loads of value in it. And if I wanted to really get in the mindset and be like, I would love to try to like push for the FKT on the AT or how fast I could do it, then I can see myself getting into that mindset. But you're right. If you're doing this as an escape, not an escape per se, that's kind of a bad word, but if you're searching for something, you're doing a lot of soul searching, you need something that's different from, you said, the rat race you just came from. You're exactly right. You know, everything doesn't have to be monetized or competition-based. I think there needs to be more personal, intimate reflection just in our daily lives and in general, in everything that we do in life. You know, there needs to be a healthy balance. So there's a whole discussion on speed hiking versus taking it slow, taking it all in, and everyone just reverts back to hike your own hike. But at the same time, I think it is an important conversation to be had about like what it's doing as a whole to the through hiking community and just like the narrative around through hiking right now, you know? It's interesting.
Yeah. And nothing against those folks out there who are setting FKTs. I mean, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
But I would venture to guess that not every one of their hikes is to set an FKT. I mean, I think there's got to be some healthy balance in their lives that, okay, they have prepared, they're going to do this, but other hikes, you know, they are taking their time and enjoying the moment and appreciating what's around them.
100%.
Okay. Hey, let's move on to the next segment, which is our must bring gear review, sponsored by the ultralight backpacking gear company, Outdoor Vitals. And here's how it works. If you were to let a stranger pack your bag for a multi-day hike with pretty much generic gear, what is the one specific piece of gear you would insist on being packed? And if you've got a particular brand for that specific piece of gear, even better. So Rad, what is your must bring piece of gear out there?
Interesting.
You say I can get by with everything else just being just kind of your normal generic REI stock stuff, but this one particular item, I need to have this.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think when I was planning for a late season Appalachian Trail through hike Sobo, I was talking to a lot of other through hikers that had done it in that time frame, and they kept saying like the key thing is just keep your sleeping bag dry and keep a good sleeping bag. And also going through this insane snow in the San Juans and different mountain ranges on the CDT, that really became the foundation. As long as I could keep my sleeping bag dry, I was going to be okay. In fact, that actually saved my life in the San Juans, a whole little ordeal we had up there.
Oh, but, can't wait to hear about that story later.
Yeah. But the AT, I mean, it just, you know, it just pours on you for days and days. And so you gotta have a good sleeping bag that's going to stay warm, even if it gets a little damp, but optimally keeping your sleeping bag dry. So I would say a good down quilt that, you know, I go with Enlightened Equipment like everybody in the thru-hiking community, but it's just so quality. Use the Enigma and then have a good dry bag, not a dry bag that's going to start coming apart after a couple months. And then if I'm allowed to say too, but it kind of goes with it, I would move 100% to a bag liner instead of a bag cover for rain protection. I used a bag cover for a while and it's always going to soak through. The water's going to drip down your back. It's going to get into your gear. And I started using a Nylafume bag liner. There's a loads of different companies that give them out. It's Nylafume isn't a hiking or through hiking brand. It's just a brand, but I got mine from Waymart Gear or like a polyethylene one, I think it's called, by Gossamer Gear. You can get those. That is probably the best way I've found in just like keeping everything nice and dry. And one of those bags lasted me the entire AT through hike. So they're very, very durable. And you just put everything in there and dude, it was awesome.
Nylafume. Yeah. So the benefit of using a Nylafume bag liner as opposed to like a hefty trash bag is the durability.
Durability, it does not leak at all. I mean, I would, you know, shove my steaks and stuff in there. Like it just never punctured. It did not leak at all. I think Nylafume is used for like when you're fumigating a house, they'll put your small kitchen appliances in it. And then a couple of thru hikers were like, that's a perfect size for a 40 liter bag. And they started like sticking it in their bags. And now tons of people are using it and it's great. But yeah, I mean, I thought I was going to go through loads of them because I've used, you know, trash bags in the past and I usually go through one a week. This one whole trip is pretty rad. Definitely would recommend that, especially for a really wet, cold trail. If you're going to go through a cold environment, you need a solid sleeping bag that's rated correctly and a way to keep that perfectly dry. If you can keep that perfectly dry, everything else can be soaking wet, even your Therm-a-Rest, but you need to have your sleeping bag dry. So even if you got to get naked and crawl in, which I had to do several times to just get out of hypothermia danger mode, then.
And show off your tattoo.
Exactly. That's the primary reason.
Yeah, sure. Of course. Yeah, so Nylafume, you heard it here first on the podcast with Rad.
That's right. And if I could do one more that you'll definitely appreciate, I got to recommend the BOA shorts.
There they are. If you are listening on Apple or Spotify, pause it right now, go to YouTube and you can see the shorts that we referenced earlier. So there you go.
That's right. These are vital shorts.
What are those? A three inch inseam?
Yep. And this one is by BOA. It's got the Kenya flag on it, repping the motherland. And I won't hike in anything else, man. It's the best.
Nice. All right. Hey, another segment that I've added that you're unfamiliar with is the hiking poll. And it's poll spelled P-O-L-L, like a survey, not P-O-L-E. Clever play on words there. I like to explain it in detail every time because like Chopper always laughs hilariously that none of my guests have any kind of reaction to that. I think I'm so clever, but there's never any kind of reaction from the guests.
No, when you sent me the outline, I picked up on that. I was like, that's cool. I like it.
Nice. All right. I knew I liked you, Brad. Nice job. So this poll helps me give you a score from a 0 to 100 on the crazy scale. Oh. With 100 being completely sane and one being absolutely bonkers. And so long trail through hikers automatically have a 20 point deduction because they're long trail through hikers. So your top possible score here is 80. That's what we're shooting for.
Man, we're starting out in the back of the pack.
That's right. That's right. Here we go. All right. Trekking poles or no trekking poles?
Trekking poles. But I did merge to using only one trekking pole after a while instead of two. So I think for the future, I'll use a shelter that doesn't require two trekking poles and just one. That seemed to work better for me.
Okay. And I'm curious, why go from two to one?
You know, just, I mean, the weight, I found myself carrying my left trekking pole in my hand, like most of the time, and sometimes using it for stabilization. And then I would just crank with my right one or sometimes swap hands. And I was like, why does this just feel so much more natural? And I started just stowing my other one in my backpack for like the last 1500 miles of the AT. And it was just weight that I didn't need. And so, you know, that's probably it.
So Rad, have you ever considered just using a single magnificent staff like Gandalf used in Lord of the Rings?
Only if it gave me superpowers to like lower the grade of a climb or something, then I think so.
That would be useful.
That would be very useful. But aside from that, I think I'll stick with the generic, boring old hiking poles.
Okay. All right. Next question. Boots or trail runners?
Definitely trail runners. Yeah. I use the Hoka Speed Goats are what I used on this last one. And I actually found a sweet spot with the 2E width. That was pretty clutch.
Next question. Tent, tarp, or hammock?
I used a tent. I used a Gossamer Gear, the one. So it was not a freestanding shelter, a single wall shelter, almost like a tarp, but it was fully enclosed, had a bug net and everything, and then uses two trekking poles to hold up.
Okay. All right. And you may have alluded to this earlier, but sleeping bag or quilt?
Definitely a quilt. You know, you don't really get a ton of warmth under you if you have a sleeping bag and then you're compressing the down underneath you. It does provide a little bit of warmth, but for the weight save, and just you still get the warmth that you need, and that thermarest under you is going to be all you need underneath you.
Okay. And this is the important question. Stove, cold soak, or stoveless?
Oof. There's
some serious point deductions here if you answer the wrong way. So
I'm with you. I would deduct some serious points as well for anyone that cold soaks. They're maniacs. Definitely stove. I cold soaked for all of Oregon and I'm still recovering from the trauma. It's horrible.
All right. And our final question, this should be interesting for you because I know you've experienced it both ways here. So long trails, northbound or southbound, they should be hiked in which direction?
Yeah, totally depends on, it's impossible to answer that question because it depends on your timeline, when you want to start the trail, what the season is like. I mean, I thought I was going to do a full NOBO of the CDT, ended up doing the world's most complicated flip-flop. You just get it done however you can. But, you know, I'd say that the SOBO experience on the AT was magical. It was really beautiful because we started late in the season, temps were awesome up in the north. We didn't have any of the humidity or bugs. And then we just followed fall for like over 1,000 miles, just tracking the warmth down south. And there was very few people. I mean, we hardly saw the whole trail. And it was just, it was really, really beautiful. So I think I would probably advocate for a SOBO AT if I was going to do it again, but you know,
okay.
Then if you do a NOBO and you do it in the summer, you get to go on swimming a lot more.
Okay. Well, let me do the math here. Let me see. I got to carry the 3, got to divide by 2, multiply by pi, and you come out with a solid 72.
72. I started at 80 and I only dropped a little bit. That's not
only a little bit. Yeah. Yep. So congratulations. There you go. Man. You can get a hat. You can get a hat with that number on it if you like.
That's great. Can you tell my mom that I'm only 72% insane?
Will do. All right. Hey, let's back up just a little bit and remind folks a little bit about your history and what you've done before. And so tell us again where you grew up, what kinds of sports and hobbies you were involved in, and how you got involved in through hiking.
Totally. So I grew up pretty much my whole life in Kenya, East Africa, where my parents worked. And so I lived in a very remote area of Kenya called Kajabi. I went to an international school there and pretty much was a little white Kenyan kid growing up. And, you know, wasn't quite sure where I was going to go to college, but ended up in Chattanooga, Tennessee in America. And the transition was real. You know, Africa is a wild place to grow up. Every tree is trying to grow a bigger thorn. Every animal is out to mess you up. And so you just kind of grow up with this mindset of the wilderness and the wild in a different way, but also everyone just kind of lives outside. There's not really any such thing as like an indoorsy and an outdoorsy person. And so when I came to the States, there was this discrepancy between like the outdoorsy community and the indoorsy community. And that was something I'd never really heard of before, but naturally I kind of connected and fell in love with the outdoors community and the thru hiking community, rock climbing and ultra running community. And they just really took me in. I felt a welcoming. There's a lot of kind of weird, strange people like me in that community. And I just kind of fit right in and really developed a passion for thru hiking after doing the John Muir Trail in 2017 with some good buddies in college. Mm-hmm. And I was just blown away. And I remember the moment where I just knew I wanted to do the PCT was coming up out of or coming down into Deer Valley right before Muir Pass. And it was right as the sun was setting. That's the Golden Staircase, aptly named. And the sun set right on the Golden Staircase. And there's this PCT hiker going Nobo. And I saw him on the staircase and I was like, dude, what? This is insane. And I just knew that it was for me. And so that ruined me in the best way. I was planning on doing the AT after college. And after that, I was like, dude, no, yeah, I gotta get on the PCT. So that led me to the PCT 2018. And then I took about a year and a half off to travel around Kenya, East Africa, again, working in a variety of different community development programs. And then came back to the States for grad school, which is what I'm still currently in. And after a few months of that, took some time off to then do the CDT and the AT, which I just recently got back from.
That's right. And we're going to get to those stories in just a bit. Before we get there, though, what are you doing currently to pay the bills or save up for your next adventure? I know you're still in grad school. Any kind of side work going on, or are the funds coming from Kenya?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely surviving on ramen right now.
Well, no different than the trail, right?
That's honestly, yeah, the north side's for the win. There's stock in the pantry. No, I mean, doing one trail is like financial ruin, and then doing two trails in the same season is just like brutal to your bank account. So yeah, it's pretty gnarly. And honestly, one of the cool things that I like about thru hiking is that you just like leave your life in shambles when you go out to do this. It's such a big commitment. And then you have to come back and like put your life back together and like apologize to all your friends that you left for 8 months and be like, I'm sorry, and find a job. It's cool in one sense because it's this super high level of commitment and sacrifice that makes the journey really beautiful. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons thru hikes are so emotional, but it does make the transition back into the real world kind of gnarly. So, but right now I've been thankful to kind of get a lot of freelance videography projects right now. And so I've been doing a lot of work for different clients and doing promotional video shoots for them. And then have a couple of irons in the fire right now for working for some bigger companies, hopefully here within the next couple months. And just excited to kind of like lean into the film industry a little bit more. So right now that's paying the bills and we'll see if I can keep it up. It's hard because like you said, I'm still in grad school. And so everything has to be really like remote and flexible and part-time. And it's just, it's kind of a limbo stage right now, but I'm figuring it out.
Okay. Hey, we're going to stop right there for a sec. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to refresh our audience, refresh their memory about what you did on the PCT and your film experience with To Measure a Mile. And we're going to get an update from Bo and Ike and see what they're up to. And then we'll get on to your recent adventure. So stay tuned for that. We'll be right back. From the backcountry to the backyard, we believe everyone deserves the highest level of protection. Since 1984, Sawyer Products offers the best, most technologically advanced solutions for protection against sun, bugs, and water, using time-released liposome technology, topical insect repellents, and new standards in water filtration. And with every Sawyer product you buy, you are helping to provide clean water through 140 charities in 80 countries with their long-lasting water filters. Every Sawyer product you buy is an investment in our common humanity. Choose Sawyer and keep the adventure going, knowing that their products have been tested and chosen by those who count on serious protection on the trail all day long. The John Freakin' Muir Pod is sponsored by Outdoor Vitals, the ultralight backpacking gear company whose mission is to improve the mental, physical, and emotional health of mankind by facilitating impactful outdoor experiences. Outdoor Vitals creates innovative technical products with confidence-inspiring education that empower outdoor ultralight adventurers. Their focus on performance enables you to live ultralight with gear you can actually be confident with.
Whether you're looking for an ultralight sleep system, shelter, or pack, or if you're looking for top quality apparel for the trail, you can find it at Outdoor Vitals. Do yourself a favor. Live ultra light.
And welcome back. We are talking to Chris Carter, also known as Rad on the Trail and on the podcast. And you just finished a big trip, but I want to go back to your 2018 trip, because that was your first leg of the Triple Crown. You hiked the PCT, and how I discovered you is I came across your video on YouTube, and it's really not doing it justice to call it a video. It's actually a documentary. It's called To Measure a Mile, and you did such a fantastic job with that. So when you say that you got some irons in the fire and you're doing some work for some folks, producing some videos, I am not surprised at all. You got some real talent, some real skill in that area.
Man, I really appreciate that. Thanks. Yeah, it's been cool. I never really thought I'd be kind of leaning into this, but there's just been some cool opportunities that have come up, and I've always viewed film and videography as a powerful way of telling a narrative and conveying a story, whether it's just accounting for what happened or trying to, you know, convince people to be passionate about a cause. You know, when I was growing up in Kenya, we had a number of people come out and kind of make promotional videos on what different organizations were doing in kind of the community development sector there. And just the impact that had to either raise funds and support for a certain effort or just raise awareness for it was impactful. And so it's been something, you know, I'm still pretty new at it. Honestly, I've got a lot to learn and I'm all totally self-taught, but I thankfully have gotten some mentors now in my life that are teaching me a lot and kind of instructing me in different techniques and how to do things in just a way that tells the story more purely. And so going into the CDTAT, I knew I wanted to film another kind of comprehensive documentary of it. And I went into it with a little more intention, a little better gear, and kind of working with some other companies this time as well to maybe make it a little more of a professional production. So, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. I'm looking forward to that. Is it going to be To Measure a Mile too? Or is to Measure a Kilometer? Or
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, To Measure Your Sanity, more like.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the name I think is going to come to me while I'm writing the script,
right?
Or mid kind of movie. That's how it happened with To Measure a Mile. It's just kind of the main, you know, whatever the main kind of focus I want to bring. I've got a lot of ideas of kind of the vibe that I want to bring to the film and some maybe messages I'd like to convey, maybe something similar to what we were talking about earlier. But yeah, I mean, essentially, it's just going to be a trip report. It was a freaking insane 8 months, the best and most gnarly time of my life. I was thrown into just like insanity that I never would have dreamed. It was cool.
Nice. Now, before we get to the insanity, if you have not experienced Chris Carter, if you have not watched To Measure a Mile, I want you to pause the podcast right now. Go back to, I think it was early season 2. And maybe episode 8, episode 9, somewhere around in there. Go back through our back catalog, find the To Measure a Mile episode and listen to that episode first. And then when you're done with that episode, I want you to go to YouTube, find his YouTube channel and find To Measure a Mile. Watch that and then come back. We'll wait for you. Go ahead and do that. All right. You're back. You're up to speed on Chris Carter, an amazing guy, some amazing adventures. And before we get to your recent trips, I want to hear about what are Bo and Ike up to, because they played a prominent role in the last episode here on the podcast. They were a couple of fun guys to talk to. Your stories, I still talk about your stories on various episodes as people say stuff that remind me of stuff. I'm always too glad to share the story of you guys under the bridge outside of, I think it was Palm Springs, and the homeless guy comes up. That is always a very funny story in my mind. But how are Bo and Ike doing? What are they up to?
They're doing well. They both have moved on in life and have gotten real jobs and are making wise decisions. And I've stayed in the same spot that I was when we were out on trail, I guess. But no, they're doing well. You know, they're both married now. Bo actually just had a kid.
Oh, wow. Congratulations, crazy. Bo.
Yep. And they're doing well. You know, Bo's still here in Chattanooga, so I see him occasionally. Ike is in Denver, Colorado now, is working for an engineering company and still shredding on the weekends, climbing, hiking, and just killing life. We still stay in contact. Both of them were huge supporters on the trail for me, and calling me and uplifting me, and because they know what it's like. They know what your mind goes through out there, and mm-hmm. they were able to kind of sit with me in the hard parts. And Bo actually came out and joined me for a couple of days on the AT with some other good friends. So that was pretty cool.
Okay. Fantastic. Great. Great to hear that they are doing so well. And they've accomplished some major milestones in their life.
They have, man. Yeah. They're all growed up now.
That just leaves you, Peter Pan.
That's right, dude. I'm always the wayfaring through hiker.
All right. Now, you did the PCT in 2018, northbound hike. And if you go back and you listen to that episode on the podcast, you can hear about all the adventures. And actually, if you watch the documentary to Measure a Mile, you can see all the adventures firsthand. But you decided that you were going to be a triple crowner. That was a goal. And you decided to do it in epic fashion. And we've kind of alluded to it. You've mentioned it a couple of times, but I really want people to understand what you did this year. You actually hiked two long trails in 2021. You started on the CDT. And was that a northbound trip?
It was supposed to be a northbound trip.
Okay. Is this the epic flip-flop that you were discussing? Yeah,
it turned into an epic flip-flop, but mm-hmm. Still able to get every mile in. Yeah.
Okay. And then after you finished the CDT, you headed over to the northern terminus of the AT and headed south.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, it was gnarly. It wasn't something I never really always anticipated doing it that way. I enjoy competing. I enjoy going as fast as I can sometimes, but I also view through hiking in more of a meditative sense. And I really enjoy absorbing the moment. And I think I kind of went into this pretty in depth on the PCT of mm-hmm. starting out as just a brand new through hiker with no idea what to do. And there's all this energy of like trying to go as fast as you can and like, oh, I'm not going to make it to Canada, you know? And by the time you're a couple months in, you're like, why the heck am I going so fast? This is the most euphoric, beautiful thing I've ever experienced. I want to sit in it and experience it and just freaking live on trail. This is insane. And so you kind of get in this mindset of like, I want to take it all in and go as slow as possible. But, you know, there's a lot of things that are kind of coming up in life, and doing the Triple Crown has always been a dream of mine, probably my longest standing dream since I was a little kid in Kenya. I remember hearing about it and just fantasizing about it. I didn't think it would ever be possible. And so I knew that was something I wanted to do. And I also know that I'd like to kind of, there's some things in life that are coming up, some big life moves and decisions that may potentially prohibit me from taking that much time off in the future. And so okay. I kind of wanted to get it done while I'm young, single. I got the time and the money, and just it all kind of worked out for me to knock both the trails out. But there was a little bit of confusion. I think some people thought I was trying to set a record or go for a certain time. I had a lot of comments about like my timeline and how fast I was going. And, you know, I did have to keep a certain pace to finish within the seasons that I wanted to, but I was not out there to set any goals. I was out there to spend really as much time as I could in these magical spaces within the time constraints of the seasons.
That's right. And so that's what I was going to, one of my questions was, you know, why two in 1 year? But you kind of explained that you don't know how many other summers you're going to have to do this before everything kind of settles down. And so you decided to do it all while you could. And what it ended up being was, depending on the routes you took on the CDT, it was probably between 5,000 and 5,400 miles.
Yeah. 5,200.
5,200. Okay. 5,200 miles.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not going to lie, man. It's awesome to do two trails in a season. I mean, you really get into it. Like you are like a part of the trail, you know, you go into towns after 7 months on trail and you're like, I am a tree. Like I don't belong in society anymore, you know? And so it's cool. Like it was, I mean, hands down the best year of my life. Just, oh, so raw, the emotions, the feels, the just being immersed in that for so long, meeting so many incredible people, but also having pure, unadulterated alone time just in these magical places of Earth, there's really no substitute. And then having just unbounded freedom, dude, like particularly on the CDT, because it was, you know, I was the first one through most of the sections because I was trying to go a little bit faster. And also I did so much flip flopping. And so I ended up hitting these sections before a lot of the no bowers or so bowers. And in 2020, not many people hiked the CDT. It was kind of the few, the proud that year. And so there wasn't a lot of beaten down path. So the CDT was like tons of bushwhacking for me and route finding and like going over blowdowns. And I mean, there was whole hundreds and hundreds of miles of trail where there was no trail pretty much. I just was walking with my GPS out and like, dude, freaking probably this way. I don't know. And then it was like tons of it was covered in snow when I was going through San Juan's. So it was just cool. Like there was not even much of a trail to follow. Sometimes I would just be like, oh, there's this, you know, ridge. I'll go up and loosely parallel the path. You know, it was cool. It was really, really special. So yeah, just the freedom was unique and beautiful. And so if someone's thinking about doing it, go for it, man. You know, I couldn't imagine doing the calendar year triple crown. I know you talked to like Woody and Buzz, the, you know, youngest calendar year triple crowners, unbelievable accomplishment. But just the pace that I had to keep up to do it too in a season, and like the amount that I feel like I kind of potentially missed out on, like particularly with on the AT, the amount of night hiking I had to do. Me personally, I think it'd be hard to convince me to try to do all three in a year.
Yeah, that is something. I talked to, like you said, Buzz and Woody. Yeah. I've talked to legend Jeff Garmeyer.
Yep.
We had earlier on this season was Jack Jones, Quadzilla.
Oh yeah.
And he is out as we're listening as our listeners are listening to this right now. He's out there trying to do the calendar triple crown this year.
Yeah.
Well, and
the 14th or 15th.
Home. Yeah, there's a few trying it this year. Also, I haven't talked to him yet, but by the time this episode comes out, this episode will also have aired. Christopher Blackwell goes by Canary. He is also setting out for the calendar triple crown. So
just animals. I mean, the dedication to do something like that is unbelievable. And the pace, you know, you can't take a zero so often. You got to know that you want to do that, because for me, the experiences, the towns as well, particularly on the CDT and the AT, you know, really beautiful historic towns that you're going through. But the CDT, you just go through these one horse, one road towns, and all the old people are sitting out on their porch drinking and talking, and you just get to roll through and sit down and chat with them and learn all the town gossip. And like, that was this beautiful little just slice of American culture, which for me was very important because I didn't grow up in America, and understanding more about American culture is very important to me. And so I wanted to really like sit in these spaces and absorb the local culture and context. And that was really important for me. So, you know, I don't want anyone to interpret me bashing on the calendar year triple. Unbelievable. You know, if you want to do it, freaking go for it. But it's you got to want it, and you got to know that it's not going to be the, you know, the same through hiking experience as you may see.
I have to imagine that the first half, so the first full trail and half of the next trail, you've got to feel that weight, that pressure of I'm not even halfway done, and I've got so much more to do. And that just seems like just a lot of pressure on yourself to get this done. You can't even really enjoy it, I wouldn't think.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's hard. And for me, your body adjusts so well. I mean, by the end of the CDT, I felt like a monster. Like, it was awesome. I was also at high altitude. Mm-hmm. And so my lungs were great. When I got on the AT, it was like, I was feeling so good. And that was really special. And so it really just became a mental battle, like halfway through the AT, of just like, dude, I've been out here a second, and I need people, I need community. Thankfully on the AT, I did it, which I'd love to go into more, as kind of this contrast of like total isolation on the CDT with a beautiful hiking partner named Wow that I connected with that I met on the PCT actually. And we did pretty much the entire AT together. So that was really special, I longed for community. I longed for some semblance of normality a little bit through, and it kind of ebbed and flowed, but that was probably the biggest hurdle halfway through the AT, which is the mental challenge.
Right. Now let's get to those hikes. Let's go logistics first. When did you start the CDT and when did you finish? And you know, you talked about the epic flip flop. What did it look like in terms of direction?
It's like, I'll try to summarize it, but it was so heinous. Like I started on April 11th, I think.
Wow. So you're going to do two trails in 1 year, two long trails in 1 year. And you started in April?
Yeah. Okay. April 12th. Yeah. Yeah. I started April 12th, and you know, my goal, I had a tentative goal of like finishing at a certain time. I knew it'd probably go out the window. But it did end up taking me about a month longer than I thought it would on the CDT because of all the insanity that I went through, but it was going well up through New Mexico, like super chill, no stress in the world. And then, hit Colorado. I was looking at the snow report and it was like doable. You know, I got snowshoes sent to Pagosa, got a whole loadout of snow gear and stuff. And, I got there and I was going to be like the first one up into the mountains. There was a handful of other hikers I was with that I kind of hiked off and on with through New Mexico. One guy was going to ski it. And so I wasn't able to hike with him, and he ended up having to hang back a little bit, and we weren't hiking together by the time I got to Colorado. And there was a couple other guys. They ended up having pretty weird, gnarly accident, like right before getting to Pagosa Springs. And so I wasn't able to hike with them. So I rolled into Pagosa Springs by myself. And I was planning on like staying there for 2 days, picking up my snowshoes and being the first hiker of the 2021 season into the San Juans. And it was like, it was packed with snow, like up to my chest of just like post holing, but it was doable. Like I had practiced with the snowshoes. I felt like I could do it. I budgeted for dropping like 15 miles a day. I mean, like dropping down. So I was only going to do like 8 to 10 miles a day. And then I got up into the sand. Well, so I rolled into Pagosa Springs. I thought I was going to go up by myself, and I was terrified because I'm from Africa. I don't have a lot of mountaineering experience per se. And so I was like, what the heck am I going to do? But I was just ready for it. Packed like 9 days of food. I was going to bust all the way to Silverton. And I like hitched into Pagosa and hopped out. And right as I got out, this guy ran up to me. He was like, dude, are you hiking the CDT? He was clearly a hiker himself. His name was Sky. He was like, I've been waiting in Pagosa for 5 days for someone to show up. Do you want to go up into the mountains tomorrow with me? I'm ready to give it a shot. I was like, what the heck? I was like totally flustered after 5 days between towns. And I was like, dude, sure. Whatever it takes to not go up into those mountains alone, man. So I got a few hours of sleep that night. And then we busted back up to Wolf Creek Pass and immediately post-holing up to our chest in snow. I mean, just absolute insanity, and started battling through. And it's a whole freaking story, but we almost made it to Silverton and got caught in these freak late May storms that came through and dumped like 2 fresh feet of snow. And we got caught in this whiteout in a blizzard. And then Sky lost one of his snowshoes. And we were like still 3 days from Silverton. So we had to pull this insanely gnarly bale out from the mountains down this gorge for two. It took us 2 days to get down. We almost got really, really hurt with hypothermia, and I got injured, and we just hobbled back into Pagosa Springs. And that's a whole epic that happened. But because of that, we were like, shoot, man, we cannot bust through that. Like, it's just going to take way too much time. And so it wasn't just the San Juans, the winds also got socked in with snow. And so we flipped up, and then we did the Great Basin. And we did that together. And then I linked up with a couple other hikers that had also done a flip. So we knocked out the Great Basin, which goes from Lander back down to Colorado. Okay. And by the time we got to Colorado, I was kind of hoping it would still be passable. I was still post-holing up to my hips in snow. And just like, dude, this is insane. So started looking everywhere else was socked with snow. So went up, back, hitched back up to Lander, tried to do the winds. They were socked in with like crazy blowdowns in snow. So I flipped up, hitched to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and did Yellowstone, started hiking from Yellowstone up, and thankfully was able to hike, kind of follow the snow as it melted from Yellowstone up to Glacier, then hitch all the way back down to the Wind River Range and knocked out the Wind River Range. and then hitched back from Lander, back down to Denver, hitched back to the trail, and knocked out the San Juans. It was so gnarly. It was just like freaking all up and down the east, the west coast.
So with all that jumping around, I mean, how long did it take you to do the CDT? You started in, you know, mid-April. When did you finish?
Mid-April, and then I finished September 7th.
Okay, so almost 5 months.
Yeah, almost 5 months. Mm-hmm. I'm not fast at all. I mean, that's the average time. And then, so I was like, dude, this might not even work. I had kind of given up on the AT, honestly, for a while. Cause I was talking to some other hikers that had done AT late season and they were like, man, you better be ready for it. Like, it's going to be gnarly. Like, if you're going to do AT late season, you should crank. Like, if you're going to start mid September, you're going to need to rip out like no less than 30s and try to get down. Cause like going through winter, if you get caught in winter, like before you get to Tennessee and stuff, it's going to be really, really bad. So I had a lot of trepidation and I was planning on doing it with this guy. Wow. And so the poor guy, I mean, he was like, hey man, what's like, we should leave soon. Like, it's going to be gnarly. And we had a goal of doing a 90 day through of the AT. He was training like crazy to do it. And we were like, that might be what we have to do, is we just got to rip out 30s a day and just, you know, crank it out in 90 days. And so I finished, I had one day, I finished in Pagosa Springs, because that's where I got off. I went down that same gorge, I bailed out, there's no snow this time, and hitched back to Pagosa, hitched to Durango, Colorado, and flew to Bangor, Maine. And the next day was summiting Katahdin. And dude, I was still shell shocked. Like, what the heck?
Okay, before we get to the AT, a few things on the CDT here.
Yeah.
Favorite portion of the CDT?
Oh man, so hard. It's just such a magical trail. I mean, my jaw was dropping everywhere. I think.
Was it the San Juans? Was it the winds? Was it glacier?
It honestly was probably the accumulation of the isolation and wild bushwhacking nature of like the Bob Marshall wilderness and the Montana Idaho border. Like, it might not have been as majestic as far as like the sweeping landscapes of glacier and the winds, but yeah, I was just out there. Like, I went, you know, over 300 miles without seeing anyone, not even another like day hiker, really. Like, I would just see people when I go into towns. No one else was out there.
You know, there is something to be said about being in a location that the only way you can be there is by putting in just a tremendous amount of miles and just knowing you're out there in the middle of nowhere and there's nobody else around. I mean, that is a magical experience.
Yeah. It was cool. That's where some of the biggest, like, just personal transformation happened, I think, for me. And like, just knowing that I had just unbounded time to myself, and definitely went a little insane talking to myself a little, maybe named both of my feet and started talking to them, but you do what you gotta do.
Well, what are the names of the feet? I got to hear this.
Tim and Jim.
Okay.
Tim and Jim. Yep. Would talk to them. I had many conversations with both of them. And we discussed the crazy questions of the universe.
Did you ever see Castaway with Tom Hanks?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So you had your own personal Wilson. Yeah, exactly. All right. Most epic moment on the trail. Was there a particular moment where it was just unbelievable? Either something happened or some view or something else?
You know, I got attacked by a bear in Glacier National Park, and that was pretty gnarly. It was wild. I was like, got to camp really early because you're on a permit system, and so you can't really do that many miles per day as one. So I would always get to camp a little earlier and set up my tent. And by that point, I was like sleeping with my bear spray because I had seen so many grizzlies. I hung my food, all my smellables, took a nap in the tent, and then I woke up and branches were just snapping like crazy all around my tent. And I woke up and I was looking right out through the mesh door, and maybe 4 or 5 feet away was this big old grizzly just staring at me. I was like, what the heck? This is crazy. And I sat up real fast and was rubbing sleep out of my eyes, and I was on Thermarest. That's kind of noisy, and must have pissed it off because it like growled real low and just charged right at me. And it was pretty much on top of me, but I was able to rip open the flap of my tent. I unfortunately had to break my tent to get it open, and I was able to get my bear spray out. I sprayed it, but the flap of the tent caught the bear spray, whipped it around and I sprayed myself full on in the face, dude. It was so gnarly. And I mean, the thing is designed to shoot 30 feet in the distance. And so the force of it just knocked me down on my back into the tent. And I was terrified because the last thing I saw was this big grizzly just a foot away from me barreling down on me. And I curled up in the fetal position. I was like reminding God of all the good things I'd done, you know, just like, this is it, bro. And I guess I had hit the bear enough, or maybe he just saw me and whimpering like a child and was like, I don't want that bad blood in me, because he dipped out. And when I came to, though, like, it was some of the worst pain I've experienced, like hands down, one of the most unpleasant things ever. I had to go to the hospital. It was so brutal.
Now, Rad, I understand that there are two ways to use bear spray. You can use the conventional way of spraying the spray at the bear and scaring it away that way, or right. You could turn it on yourself and hose yourself down in this bear spray so that the bear will find you not appetizing. And I think you went with the less conventional method, and it worked. I mean, you're here talking to us today.
Yeah. So there's the alpha method and the beta method, and you got to just kind of analyze the situation and figure out what the best one to use is. Or he might think that you're just like seasoning yourself up for him, like throwing some paprika on you or something.
Now, I want to thank you, because I've talked to a number of guests, and I'll ask them, you know, for stories. We want to hear stories. That's what everybody's intrigued about. You know, what happens out there on the trail and just some epic stuff. And a lot of people, I'll get to the very end of the episode and say, okay, there's a segment about, you know, what haven't I asked you? And they'll say, oh yeah, there's this time I almost got attacked by a bear. I'm like, you just buried the lead. Why wouldn't you tell that story early on in the episode so we could explore it instead of at the very end? And that's awesome. You didn't disappoint. You did not keep that to yourself. You laid it out there. So thank you.
Yeah, it was funny because, you know, everyone was pretty concerned about grizzlies, obviously. Like, and they'd been acting really weird this past year, because it was a drought season. And so they were getting pretty aggressive. And when that happened to me, my story kind of circulated around both the Sobo and Nobo community. And as I started hiking, I was hiking southbound at that point. When I started hiking southbound, all the Noboers that were passing me were like, you're the guy that sprayed yourself in the face. I was not known as the guy that got attacked by the bear. All I was known was the guy that sprayed myself in the face. So Mace to the Face would have been a good trail name had I not already been named Rad.
That's a pretty rad story though. Very good. Now, did you tell your girlfriend or mom and dad about this? Or did you keep that to yourself until you were done with both hikes?
Yeah, no. I told them. I called them when I was in the hospital. But yeah, man. I mean, I was scared. I wear contacts, and I had read that it's really dangerous if you spray yourself in the face and you have contacts. You have to irrigate for 5 minutes and then take your contacts out and then irrigate for another 20 minutes. Otherwise, it can like really damage your eye. And when I went to the doctor, he said that if I hadn't gone to the doctor, I would have had permanent eye damage because of how close the spray was. The force of it basically injected it like into my eye. So he was like, if you hadn't come, and they like properly cleansed me. And I mean, dude, it was a good like 9 hours before the pain just subsided. Like it was absolutely brutal. Thankfully, I was really close to a road where another hiker led me by the hand up, because I was totally blind. I couldn't see a thing. Flagged down a car, and the super sweet couple drove way out of their way. Took them about till midnight to this little hospital in Browning, Montana.
Okay. So a couple of things to learn here for our listeners. Number one, you don't want to hit yourself in the face with bear spray. And if you are, you know, aiming the bear spray at the bear, aim lower than the eye. I hate for that to happen to the bear too. You know, you don't want permanent eye damage in the bear, you know, go for like the chest or something. So
yeah, it's not PETA approved.
All right. Anything else from the CDT you want to share? I mean, it's 3,100 miles, and we talked about it for 10 minutes. So I know there's a lot there. So I don't, you know, what else?
there's a million stories, man. This is anyone thinking about doing the CDT. Don't second guess yourself. Go for it. A lot of people are scared about it because it's like a lot more navigation. It's not even completed. There's a lot of road walking, but I mean, just the most magical trail. It's something that, you know, I didn't even remember was the Gila River in New Mexico, this beautiful river that you just bushwhack and wade up for about 100 miles in pure isolation. No one else is out there, and you're just wading up this river. There's like hot springs you go by, these towering slot canyons you're going through. Dude, it's just unbelievable.
And you cross and recross the river multiple times.
Oh, over 100 times.
Yeah, that's what I remember hearing. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely stunning. Yeah. So do it. Do it for sure if you can.
Okay. So you and WoW finish in September. You have a day off.
Well, no, WoW actually did not hike the CDT with me.
Okay.
I met him on the PCT, and then he was doing a bunch of other smaller through hikes and high routes while I was on the CDT to train for the speed AT Sobo that we were planning.
Got it. So you finish the CDT.
Yeah.
You pair up with WoW and you head out to the AT on one day rest, one day difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And how does the southbound hike of the AT go? Were you able to, was it a full southbound hike or did you have to flip flop that one as well?
Yeah. Thankfully that was a full Sobo hike. And, you know, I didn't realize how impactful and important a linear journey was until getting on the AT, because like I would get to a state on this CDT, like Wyoming. There's this big sign of like, congrats CDT hikers, you know, you made it to Wyoming, and I would have already done half the state. And so I didn't get that euphoric sense of celebration from doing this linear journey. And on the AT, you know, we'd hit a state marker and there was this huge celebration and we pop champagne and we're hugging each other. And it was this camaraderie, because you're able to break it up into smaller segments and have that be your goal. Like a marathon, you think of it in terms of aid station to aid station, not beginning to end. And with the CDT, it was so hard for me to get in that mindset. And I think part of what made it really challenging for me, one, I was all alone. So I had to find my motivation all by myself. And also I didn't have these little micro goals that I could reach necessarily like I did on the AT, of like the halfway point, certain mile markers. You know, anytime there was a mile marker written in rocks on the CDT, it was never accurate for me. I had no idea really what mile I was at until I was getting close to being done. And that really messes with you on a through hike. So yeah, thankfully I was able to do the whole thing, you know, Maine to Georgia, no interruptions.
Yeah. And we've talked about it a little bit already. I mean, just the post-trail depression. Now you're talking now about the mind game of being able, you know, of a sequential through hike. I mean, so much of these long trail hikes are mental. I mean, there's such an emphasis on that. And, you know, I wonder sometimes, I know it's a huge physical challenge, but I mean, you're out there with your own thoughts and you're trying to motivate yourself and stay at it. And I think that sometimes the mental challenge is just as tough as the physical challenge.
I totally agree. I think you get your hiker legs for different people. It's different lengths. For me, I usually get it between 500 and 700 miles of the start of the trail. And then you just adjust, you know, and it becomes, then the mental challenge takes over, because yeah. I think when you have the physical challenge, it's something to focus on. You're like focusing on the pain and it's super challenging and rough. And when that's done, it just becomes like breathing, you know, that's what you do. You wake up and you walk. And so then what are you going to think of? And you can think of everything. Like you just run out of things to think of. There's only so much you can think of. And especially on the CDT, like I wasn't able to use my phone that much to like listen to podcasts and music, because I was having to conserve battery more. On the AT, I could do a lot more of kind of like listening to audiobooks, lectures, and podcasts and stuff. And that was cool. And I had someone to talk to in WoW, not just my feet. And so that was cool. But yeah, man, the mental challenge is definitely the biggest battle. It can be your greatest, you know, your greatest ally or your biggest enemy on these trips for sure.
Okay. And did everything go according to plan on the AT? Did you encounter any weather or any other misadventures?
Yeah, no, it did not all go according to plan. But we went in purposely without a lot of plans. The plan was get to Georgia as fast as possible, and we'll see what happens along the way. The AT is thankfully very easy to plan for. Like once you get through the 100-mile wilderness at the beginning up in Maine, then you're really only 2 to 3 days between towns. And so not a lot bad can happen. And it was just a lot more logistically simple. And so we went into it with like zero plans. Like we figured out how to get pretty much totally figured out how to get the permit to summit Katahdin, because I was super deep in the Wemenooch wilderness in Colorado. And I texted him on my Garmin InReach. I was like, dude, I have no service. Can you get permits for us? And he had to figure out this horrible system of getting like last minute permits to summit Katahdin, because I had no idea like what day I was going to be done. So there was like a couple logistical things we had to figure out. But aside from that, we just kind of winged it, went for it. And it pretty much went you know, according to plan, but the weather was wild. We hit some insane weather through the White Mountains in New Hampshire, going up over Mount Washington and the Presidential Traverse, and absolutely wild, like sideways snow and sleet and crazy. You know, it was the most insane weather in the world is on top of Mount Washington, you know?
Yeah. We've talked about that before on this podcast.
Yeah.
Some extreme conditions up on top of Mount Washington.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. So that was cool. But yeah, I mean, crazy rains in New Hampshire, but then dude, I mean, we started hitting the mid-Atlantic and the colors of fall started popping and it was just like walking in a fairyland for months, you know, just beautiful colors, leaves started falling. And by the time the leaves were gone behind us, we'd walk into a new section of beautiful colors. It was wild. That was a really cool way to experience it.
Anybody else on the trail at that time of year in that direction other than you two?
No, there was no one. I mean, we passed all the northbound guys that were finishing right at the beginning. And then I'd say by the time we like, I don't know, hard to say what state, but maybe like around New York, we just started running. We didn't see like any other hikers. It was crazy. I mean, you see day hikers on the weekend and stuff, obviously, but it was very isolated. If I didn't have WOW, I would have gone absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm. And the best way to tell a day hiker, other than what gear they're carrying, is how they smell, right?
Oh, dude, you can smell them from a mile away.
Oh, yeah, they smell good.
That shampoo and laundry detergent. And I'm sure they smelled it conversely, us approaching.
They saw you coming. They smelled you coming. Yes. Yep. All right. Any bear attacks on the AT?
No, we didn't actually see any bears on the AT. We saw some moose and deer and lots of squirrels and really not a lot of wildlife, but it was cool. It was, you know, the CDT was a battle. Like every stage was a battle and it was just like brutal. Like I had to really go into this mindset of like just pain cave in a way that I don't think I ever have before. And going on the AT was magical release from a lot of that because I was battling snow, smoke, record-setting temps this past summer where I passed out a couple times up in Montana from the heat and crazy blowdowns, no trail to follow. And then I went on the AT and it was like constant shade, perfect temps, no bugs, you know, walking through a green tunnel. You get hot, you jump in a river. Like it was beautiful, but we did have to keep up a really fast pace. So, you know, we got to the point where we couldn't do anything under 35 miles a day. And so we just cranked that out every day for like 2 months. And it was probably the biggest challenge was, I started getting to my head once we got to the end, I realized I'm going to do it. Like this thing that was a pipe dream for so long of getting to the end of the Triple Crown is actually going to happen. And even the smaller goal of doing the AT right after the CDT. And I realized I wanted to sit in that and appreciate it. And because the days were so short, we were hiking sometimes 15 miles in the dark every day. And those were miles that I was like missing. You know, I wasn't able to see the surroundings and take it all in. There's a beauty found in night hiking, but it's just not the same for me. And WOW, for a lot of different reasons, was very dead set on the 90-day goal. And as we started getting down to Tennessee, to the Smoky Mountains, to Nantahala, places that I had really been looking forward to as kind of a final checkpoint, I had to say, dude, I got to slow down. You know, I got to take it all in. These are the final steps, the Triple Crown, the final steps of this insane journey. And it's becoming too much of a grind for me. And I need to be able to stop and sit at the base of a waterfall if I want to and absorb it and not hit 35 miles every day if I don't want to. And once I figured out what I had to do to like make it before Christmas, at least, and before like a couple of events that I wanted to be there for my girlfriend, then I had this peace in my heart of like, I took this deep breath and I could slow down. And I think that was like the first time all journey that I was just able to truly like be in the moment and just appreciate it fully for what a through hike is. There was no pressure for timeline, no pressure for like, got to make it to this town before I run out of food, got to do this. Like it was beautiful. And so I think, you know, the last couple weeks were some of the most like in tune with myself on a through hike I've ever been, even though I would love to have finished with WOW, we both respect each other and love each other for how we finished out there at the end. And I'm glad that we honored our own passions, but that was definitely, you know, what I needed was to kind of be alone, be with myself, and slow down and take it all in there at the end.
Yeah. This was your experience. You deserve to be able to finish it and process it the way you need to do so.
And so does he, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It was both of us just looked at each other and we're like, saw the value in the other person's perspective. And we loved each other enough to honor and respect that in each other. But as you know, I mean, I think you've hiked the John Muir Trail with other people, right? You weren't alone.
Right.
The camaraderie that you build with hiking partners is unfathomable. Like, it's just so tight because you go through incredible trials. And so Wow and I were brothers, you know, and it was not easy to not finish with him. I mean, there was lots of tears, and you really just have this bond with people when you're on a through hike. And so it was a hard decision to make for sure, but we think we made the right one.
Yep. I'm sure you did. Now take us through what's going on in your noggin as you are approaching Springer. I mean, you've got 5,200 miles under your trail runners. This is the last piece to becoming a bona fide triple crowner, just everything that's gone into it from 2018 to, you know, middle of December there. What's going through your head?
Yeah, man. And I think we actually maybe touched a little bit on this on our interview with the PCT, but you really don't allow yourself to think about the end until you're really close, because it's kind of like that mentality, right? You don't want to always be thinking about the finish line. You break it up into smaller chunks. And so the thought of doing the triple crown was always this very abstract, you know, potentially maybe it'll happen. And then the thought of getting on the AT after the CDT was a pipe dream. And then there was naysayers all along the way, like, what, you want to do it 90 days itself is insane, but you're so late season, you're going to run into horrible snow in the Smokies. I mean, so many people just like kind of beating us down, and we were scared. We were like, are we going to make it? Like, this is wild. And, you know, we did. And like those last couple of days, it was just like finally no pressure and just this full release of tension that had kind of been in me from the beginning. It was beautiful, like so many tears and like just processing and, you know, just allowing myself to think back on all the moments and like really just, yeah, appreciate each stage of the journey and see it as a whole. Cause you can't really understand and see the journey as a whole until you're there at the end and you get a look back and you're like, man, that was so hard in the moment. I didn't think I was gonna pull out of that, but I did, and I'm so glad I did. And that made this part of the journey so much better. You know, like there is many times on the CDT and AT that I thought about quitting. I never thought about quitting on the PCT. Like it wasn't something I thought about. And this time I was really, really close to quitting several times. And, you know, looking back at that and being like, man, that was like an essential part of the narrative of this journey. And like my story is cool, but you don't really get to see that until the end. So that all comes crashing in around you at once. And you're like, whoa. And then as we talked about as well, you know, joy for accomplishing this, but then also deep sadness and sorrow at mourning the end of this beautiful lifestyle, particularly after the end of the triple crown. Cause like that's the triple, like you can only do the triple crown once, like the first time, one time, you know, those emotions are, you can't replicate them. And so I wanted to sit in it, but then I was also like mourning the loss of this lifestyle that's meant so much to me over the years. And I think I'm still kind of like figuring out
that
right now.
Yeah. It'll sit with you for a while. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people and, you know, months, and they're still trying to process, you know, that it's in the past and, you know, they're back in civilization and, there is a lot to process there. So hang in there, buddy, and congratulations. Really proud of you. And, fantastic that you are a triple crowner and you did it in such epic style. I mean, we talked to a number of people on the podcast that I think are just incredible people, incredible badasses, if you will. This is one of those accomplishments, Rad, that this is a big, big accomplishment. Congratulations.
Man, I really appreciate that, Doc. Thank you so much.
Now, I hate to even ask this next question because we're still processing what just happened, but what's next for Rad? What is there a next adventure that you already have in mind, or you're going to give yourself some time to kind of process that?
Yeah. I don't want to always live my life with the what's next mentality. I think that's a big part of what I've kind of been like processing with myself and some of my other through hiking friends as we think about what causes post-trail depression and what causes like a lot of these feelings of like the post-trail blues. And what we've kind of boiled it down to is this like sense of unsatisfaction, right? And like constantly being like, what's next? What's next? And I think you got to strike this balance between honoring who you are as an adventurer and someone that's constantly going to want to live this lifestyle, but then trying to be satisfied in what you just accomplished and not constantly thinking about what's next. And so obviously I've got dreams and goals and, you know, tentative plans for like my girlfriend and I have maybe talked about doing the Te Ora together in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. I'd love to get on the Great Divide Trail and knock that out. There's some, you know, motorcycle touring I'd really like to do, maybe some other disciplines, some long adventures and some other sports. But I'm really right now just kind of trying to sit in this accomplishment and soak it all in and like appreciate it for what it is, you know? And I think that's helped with kind of, I'm not going to say I haven't battled post-trail depression, but it's, I think it's helped with it. I don't feel like it's hitting me as hard as it might otherwise. Mm-hmm. Constantly like comparing myself and, oh, I only did 2 trails in a year. This guy did 3 in 1 year. Like there's just this weird like competition, which is, I don't know where that comes from. You know, I think it's just human nature, I guess, but that's not what through hiking's about to me. It's a personal thing. And I want to really just like sit in this and figure out kind of what it means for me, you know? Mm-hmm.
You're a wise man, Rad, because I've got a few years on you and I only figured out recently that, you know, when you're a young kid, you're always looking forward. You're always, it's very tough to live in the moment as a kid, when you're looking forward to, you know, going to high school, driving, dating, going to college, what's my career going to be? Who am I going to marry? You're always looking forward. And then at some point in your life, when you get to be my age, you look back and you're thinking about the good old days, right? And wow, when we did this, and man, do you remember that? And we didn't have to worry about this. And it's very difficult. I think it's a real skill to be able to live in the moment and appreciate what's happening when it's happening. And what you just described there about, you know, possibly, you know, thinking about what the next adventure is and that contributing to this post-trail depression, I think you hit it right on the head, buddy. I think you're exactly right there. And I think you're very smart to, even when you finish a trail and you're back and you're reacquainting yourself with everybody, stay in that moment as well. I mean, appreciate what you got going on and who you've missed for the last 8 months. And I think you're exactly right that just looking ahead immediately after finishing something that does not lead to a lot of satisfaction.
Yeah. Amen, man. I totally agree with that. And it's a concept that I'm kind of slowly kind of understanding in myself, because I don't want to betray who I am. I'm thankful for my passions that I have and my drive to want to do things. And I've still got a massive bucket list of things I want to do, but they'll come in time. And even having this mindset on a through hike was really important, because if you're just out there to pursue the mountaintop experiences and the views, majority of your through hike is going to be really rough, because it's not all sweeping landscapes and panoramas. A lot of it is grinding through rocky, muddy tree tunnels for weeks. And then
wait a second. That's not what I see on Instagram. It's all just beautiful things that happen out there, right?
Yeah. It's all McAfee Knob, just nonstop on the AT.
Well, you have really done your butt tattoo proud. You lived up to that, that moniker on your cheek there, Rad. Nice job. Do you know where we are, Rad?
What's that?
We are at that part of the episode where I turn to you and ask you for your pro tip insight of the week. What bit of trail wisdom can you share with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better?
I did a little bit of thinking, because I remember you asking that question last time and I was taken aback a little bit. So I tried to come prepared, and I think it actually segues pretty well with what we just talked about, which is learning how to find beauty in everything on trail. And trying to think about it in the grand scheme of things. So instead of just pushing for those mountaintop experiences and the grand sweeping landscapes and thinking about the hills as a means to an end, getting to the top of a peak and looking at it, thinking about hills on the AT as what we call PUDs, pointless ups and downs. I hate that term because they're not point. If there's a pointless up and down, through the whole through hiking is a PUD. Like there's no point to it really. And so it all depends on where you find beauty and what you place value in. And so this concept of a PUD got me really frustrated. And I would just encourage people to try to find beauty and value in that little mushroom peeking out of the rocks with some moss by it as you're hiking up this hill to the top of, you know, Musalaki Mountain up, you know, in on the AT. And like, just don't live for the peaks. Like, try to find beauty in everything and in the moment and try to live in the moment. It'll make your experience so much more rich. You'll also start to see how the narrative plays out as a whole and how every part of the journey is essential for the story that you're going to replay in your mind over and over again. Whether you make a film about it or not, you're always going to be replaying this hypothetical documentary in your mind. And that's what brings up these beautiful feelings of joy and euphoria and nostalgia about these trips. And so if you think about it in terms of like this film and this narrative, then everything has its place. The good sleeping under a bridge with a hobo, you know, is just as important as summiting Mount Whitney in the sunrise or in the sunset. And like, that is an essential part of the story. And it really rounds it out and makes it a beautiful experience. It's going to have a life-changing impact on you.
Very good. Boys and girls, if you're listening out there, put 5,200 miles under your trail runners and you too can become a Zen philosopher like Rad. Fantastic. You have achieved bliss. I mean, you've got the whole package. Nice job.
I appreciate that. Do not think I have it down. I'm down. This is me processing it and trying to convince myself to have this mindset right now.
You got me convinced. You've got it down.
Love it.
So there you have it. That's it. This episode is just about in the books. Hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Rad. Want to thank him for joining us this week. And thank you for capping off season 3, episode 50, episode 150 of the podcast. Really, really excited that I was able to spend this episode with you. You did a fantastic job tonight. How can our listeners keep up with you on social media, and where can they find updates on your latest adventures?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram, ChrisCarter146. And I got my YouTube linked there in the bio. You can follow me on YouTube. I'll be, you know, putting out some updates about this progress for this documentary, link in the CDT and the AT. I do intend on putting this out. And then there's, you know, maybe some potential in the works. It'll be on some streaming platforms or working with, yeah, there's a couple of irons in the fire right now of maybe making this a little bit more of a story that has an impact instead of just a story. And so I'm excited to see what happens, but you can kind of follow those updates on Instagram and YouTube.
Can't wait to see that. I imagine it's going to take some time though, to take all that footage from those two trails and kind of put it together, put the story together. So it's not coming out next month. I'm anticipating.
Yeah, no, I don't have the trailer out yet.
Okay. All right. Hey, remember to check out the podcast on social media as well. We're on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And if you have comments or clips you want to share, you can send it to me at johnfreakingmuir@gmail.com. Rad, I'm also looking to you to share a recommendation for a book, movie, documentary, some kind of adventure media to keep our listeners connected to the trail during the off season. We're calling this our adventure media recommendation. And it's already stipulated that people should check out To Measure a Mile. That in addition to that, what else would you point in their direction?
Oh man. I would say The Rescue, right? Yeah. The Rescue, the film by, Jimmy Chin and, Elizabeth, they chronicled the like crazy rescue of the like soccer team, in Thailand, in Northern Thailand, okay. I think. Yeah, really beautiful, beautiful documentary. I just watched that the other day with Emily, my girlfriend, and inspiring adventure film, you know, as far as like cave diving, but also just a humanity film, like looking at, you know, what goes into a survival situation and how to react under pressure. Beautiful cinematography, obviously. But yeah, I think it's called The Rescue by by Jimmy Chin. Definitely check that out.
Fantastic. I mean, I'm familiar with the adventure as most people are, having to do that rescue, and the actual logistics behind that rescue are just absolutely crazy.
Oh, wild. Yeah.
But I did not know that Jimmy Chin was involved in the documentary. So that's interesting. We'll have to check that out. He's fantastic.
Phenomenal storyteller and just visual storyteller. Yeah, it's an incredible watch.
Okay, thank you for that. And before we wrap things up, I've got just one more segment for you called "What Have I Not Asked You That You're Dying to Tell Us About?"
Yeah, we covered a lot.
We did.
Man, trying to think. Something that a lot of people have asked me about, and I would like to maybe kind of talk about this in maybe a YouTube video or something. I've had some requests, just like the social impact of leaving a community for that long, whether it's a family or friends, or in my case, a girlfriend. You know, a lot of people say it's like impossible to date on trail, and it's definitely challenging. But you know, Emily and I thankfully made it work, but it was a learning process. And it was this whole really beautiful conversation about just what does it look like to leave a community and do a through hike, and kind of how does that play into it? And, you know, I think it's something that deters a lot of people from pursuing their dreams and going out and doing a through hike that they've always dreamed of. Maybe they've got a girlfriend who can't take the time off to do it with them, or a boyfriend, or they don't think that they're parents would be supportive, or they're scared to be away from them for that long. And, you know, I think that it's important to lean into that, but to also like just try to have conversations with your community, try to get them to understand why you want to do that, because oftentimes they just don't understand the draw and they don't understand what that entails. You know, to them, it just sounds like a walk in the woods, but it's this journey of soul searching and kind of like a pilgrimage almost. There's a lot of value in it. And sometimes it just takes kind of talking to people that are important in your life to really portray why that's important to you, and therefore something that the relationship will survive if you go out and do that. You know, I don't
communicate,
know.
Communicate. Yeah. Combo. Yep. Absolutely. Communicate. Try and make them understand why you're a 72 on the through hiking pole quiz.
Oh yeah.
Right. Yeah. And
I scored better than I thought.
All right. That is a wrap from the John Freaking Muir studio. Any shout outs to friends and family, Brad?
Oh man. I mean, kind of, you know, dovetailing from that, just the support that I got from primarily my girlfriend, Emily, and my parents and my family and my close friends back here in chat. You know, it's hard. You know, I was trying to delve into my relationship with my girlfriend and do that from, you know, trying to balance on a rock, trying to get signal in the middle of the Bob Marshall wilderness. And like, it's hard to really keep a relationship afloat, but she stuck with me, supported me. And, you know, my family was such huge support. And like, when you're alone for that long, like community is key, you know, having this feeling that people are backing you up and supporting you. And so I'm just so thankful for the people that did.
Yeah. Emily, she's a keeper.
Yeah. She's a thug, man. She's awesome.
All right. Thank you for tuning in. Always remember, the trail is the trail. It doesn't care if you want to go downhill. It doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. It doesn't even care if you just sprayed yourself in the face with bear spray to ward off a charging grizzly. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.